Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, on this Heleke Rosh Chodesh Sivan, Tov Shin Pei, is daf Ayin Tet. And we're holding over here in the middle of the sugya. The last thing that we were talking about is the machlokas about carrying out an already used IOU that someone had signed to you. So according to the Tanakhama, if it hadn't yet been paid, so then you would be chayav, but once it's paid, it's useless. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, even after it was paid, you would still be chayav. So we had a number of different approaches as to what could possibly be the machlokas about this. Okay, so Rabbi Yosef's suggestion was, the machlokas is whether it is mutter to allow a paid IOU to remain in your rishus, because it says, al tishkon ba'alecha avla, you're not supposed to have something that can lead you to do something wrong. And if you have this IOU, who knows if you might forget, or you might become a ganav at one point, or you might die and leave it over, and it'll be collected again. So therefore, in order to make sure that you don't come to anything that would be wrong, you have to get rid of that shtar. It is useless. If it's useless and you carry it on Shabbos, then you would be putter. Masha Enkein, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he holds you're allowed to use it. Don't collect it, but you're allowed to use it as a perfume cover. And because of that, it still has the same shear as a piece of paper that could be used to cover a perfume bottle. That was one approach. Abaya said that the question was something else. Everybody agrees that you certainly do not have a right to keep an IOU that was paid up. The question over here is that the guy who has the IOU and has made it his IOU, if he says, I paid it up, is the IOU going to be useful? That's the question. And that's the question which is called Meida Bishtasha Ketavo, whether he requires Kiyun. So if you say that once a person admits, yes, this is my writing, obviously this is my IOU, so what? I paid it up. So then that would be Apesha Asara, Apesha Hitir. And therefore, it would have no validity. You wouldn't be able to use it to collect it. Because of that, it would be usable as a perfume cover. Masha Enkein, if you hold that once the guy says that it's mine, then the shtar becomes a valid shtar, and you would be able to collect with it. So then, Rabbi Yehuda says, that idea would therefore leave you in a position that you would be chayav on. So that would be the shayla. Do you need to be Porea or not? So according to this approach, when it says in the words Achalo Paro or Misha Paro, it doesn't mean literally Paro. It means to the point where the man says, I paid it, or the man did not say, I paid it. That's what the difference would be. Rava Amar, today we're up to the top on Ayin Tes. Rava Amar, so Rava says, no. Kule Alma, everybody is made that shtar shekatvo tzorich lekaimo. If you had a shtar, then the moment that you admit to having written that shtar and signed on that shtar, you could certainly collect it. So if you claim that you paid back this loan, then the idea over there would be it would need kiyum and it would be useless, and therefore there'd be no chiyuv on taking it on Shabbos. Because if you hold tzarech l'kaimo, it means I need to find Edim. I don't have Edim that are going to be able to be made to me that this is a good shtar. I only have this guy's word for it, but he's claiming that he paid it up. And because of that, it's useless. And therefore, why would I be chayav for taking it out as the lender? But what we're arguing about over here, where Rabbi Yehuda said that you would be chayav, is we're talking about a shtar that is usable because it was kiyum. That's not the issue over here. We're not talking about that. The machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda with the Chachomim is whether the lender is allowed to write a shover. So suppose the guy says, look, I can't find my IOU, but you owe me $100. The guy says, yeah, I do owe you $100, but I have no intention of paying you until you give me back the IOU, because otherwise I'm afraid you're going to come and collect again. So the question is, can the lender say, look, you know what I'll do? I'll write you out a receipt that you paid me the $100. And then if I find the shover, I'll give it back. If I find the star, the IOU, I'll give it back to you. If not, meanwhile, what's the difference? You keep the receipt. Now, there's a big difference because the borrower can say, I don't want to accept the receipt. Means that I'm going to have to keep this receipt forever. Because if in another 10 years you find the IOU and you forget that I paid you and you come back to collect, if I can't find my receipt, I'm up the creek. So I refuse. I don't allow you to give me a receipt. As soon as you find your star, I'll pay you your money. Otherwise, you don't get paid. So that's the question. So we have an IOU. It's a proper IOU. And the Shaila is over here. Whether we'll allow the Malve to write a shofar. So the Tanakama holds, yes. So therefore, if the loan is paid, then I don't need this star anymore because I'm not going to need it to be able to collect because I can collect without it because the shofar is good enough. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, you cannot force the guy to accept a receipt. So let's say the guy pays the loan. He says, okay, listen, I'll make a deal with you. You give me now, I'm going to give you the money and you have a week to return it to me. If you can't find it in a week, then I'm going to demand, and you give me that receipt, I'm going to bring a receipt to court and demand that you give me the money back. Because I'm not mechuyev to keep this receipt forever. So according to that, he certainly is going to need it to be able to collect, because otherwise the guy will sue him for the money back. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds, it's a very valuable document. Rav Ashi says, you guys have it all wrong. We're not talking about a case where the lender was the one who carried it out on Shabbos. We're talking about a case where the Love was the one who carried it out on Shabbos after it was given back to him when he actually did pay up and everything was done on the up and up. So the Tanakhama says, the guy obviously is not going to want this IOU for any purpose. What do you mean? Can't he use it to cover a perfume bottle? He won't want to because the most important thing to him is to tear the thing up and throw it in the garbage pail because if he's going to make any use of it, he's always nervous that at some point they can fall and be found by the lender. See, it's useless. Masha Enke, Rabbi Yehuda says people will actually have a reason to keep an old IOU for the same reason that we spoke about yesterday about the moches. It's useful for a banker. It's useful to show someone, look, I'm a guy that's taken out many loans. Here are the loans. They've all been paid up, all been returned to me. And you can see that I'm a reliable guy. So if he wants to borrow money in the future, he can say, look, Chazi, Gavra de Paran, I'm the kind of guy that always pays up my debts. Okay. Next thing in the Mishnah, we said, how much or? So or would be just hide, right? Enough, we said, to make a kamiya, meaning enough leather that it would wrap around the kamiya, which contains whatever psukim or whatever kind of spices or magical whatever things. So now, Rava came and asked Rav Nachman a series which he was leading up to something. He obviously knew the mission. So he asks Rav Nachman, okay, what's the shear of somebody who takes out a piece of hide? What do you mean? It's a mission. I get it done. Or kedei lasot kamiya. Okay, very good. Now I have another question. How much or that you would go ahead and be ma'abed to actually do the tanning, what's the shear of the amount of or that you need to be chayev? Omar le'lo shana, it's the same thing. If the amount of skin that you is considered to be choshev in terms of hotzah is the amount to make the kamiya, so then that would be the amount of or that's choshev for you to be ma'abed. It's a small amount of or. So there's no difference at all. Okay. How about, says Rava to him, if you're taking it out in order to do the tanning on it? So le abdo, what would be the shear? But right now it hasn't been tanned. Armada, it's the same thing. Even if it hasn't been tanned, if you're taking it out to tan, then it has the same chashivas as the or that was already tanned. How do you know that, says Rava? What makes you say that when you haven't done it yet, because of the fact that it's usable to be able to do it, that gives it the same chashivas as if it was already done? Now, you'll note the similarity of this question to the question that we had yesterday about what the water is in the fridge and you're still, 2 days ago, the water's in the fridge and you're still going to add it to the shear of the wine. So over here, you're saying because of the potential for me to be able to tan it and use it, it's the same shear. But where do you get that from? Says Reb Nachman, well, actually, the Mishnah says later on something that makes this very clear. Because over there, it's talking about malabain of wool, which is washing the wool, or minapetz, which is untangling the wool, or tzovea, which is dyeing the wool, or spinning the wool. It's exactly the same shear for all of these things. And what is that? The shear is k'mlo rochav hasit hakafu, a double sit. The sit is the distance between your forefinger and index finger, and stretched very far. And if that would be doubled over, so then you would be chayev. So you see, what do you see from there? That any stage that is leading up to tvia is exactly the same. So it's apparently, it doesn't matter, right? It's exactly the same thing. And I would say the same thing is true here. So Amar Kivin to Tvia Koi. If ultimately your goal is to make a spin a thread, so then everything that you do to the wool till that point that is going to be part of that process is exactly the same shear. So Hachinami, since ultimately the purpose is to get the ore that is tanned, so then each stage would be the same, including taking it out in order to tan. So keep it alab do koish, yiro kemubad. Okay, says Rabbi, fine, I accept that. Now let me ask you something else. How about taking out just raw skin and not having in mind that you're going to be tanning it? You just took it out today. What's your there? No difference, says Rabbi Nach. Says Rabbi, that's what I thought you would say. Lo shani be mu'ubat ashena mu'ubat. But you're telling me there's no difference between something when it's been processed and when it hasn't been processed. I'll prove to you that that's wrong. Eitve. Hamotzi samanim shruyin. So if you take out the types of dyeing matter, plants that are going to be used to be making dye, and you already had left them inside of the water, then the amount of the actual dye stuff that you would need to take out, you'd be chayev kedei lizboa behem dugma li'ira. All that you need that's considered to be chashev is, as we've seen earlier, samples. Samples are considered to be the smallest possible chashev ashir. Because, I mean, even though, what are you going to do with it? You're going to show it, and that's sufficient. Now, the shear that was the normal size to use for a dye swetch is the size of the what's used for the ira. And what that was, you will remember that in order to make certain that the shuttle that you're throwing across the warp threads in the loom doesn't unravel and the thread doesn't just like fly out, you put a little piece of material in there to put some pressure on the thread. So we were able to adjust it very carefully with the amount of material you press up against the opening of the shuttle. So that size is the size that is used for samples of colors. Okay, so that's a very small size, right? Now, according to you, Reb Nachman, says Rava, you should be saying that the same thing would be true if I was taking out the material in order to be sure of the material, right? Because you say every step of the material is exactly the same thing, whether I'm washing the wool or I'm combing the wool or anything else. Okay, so the same thing is true over here, and yet that's not true. Because it says in the Mishnah, not like that. V'simanim, samanim, she'inam shruyim. If I haven't yet steeped this in water, then the amount that I'm chayev on, let's say I'm taking out, this is the Lashon of the Mishnah, klipei agozim, the klipei rimonim, so whether you've got the shells of nuts, you have peels of pomegranates, or of satis, or of pua. Again, pua we always say is matter, and the satis is usually called safflower, but whatever these dye stuffs are, the shear is kedelitz boab and beged katan lefis facha. They used to use a little decorative cloth on the top of the hat that a woman would wear. And that's a larger size than a dugma le'ira. And that's the shear. Now, according to you, it should be exactly the same shear as a dugma le'ira. And yet, because of the fact that it's not processed, it requires a bigger shear. So this is a fundamental point, says Rava. I mean, if the idea is that we always look for the ultimate usability and its potential, which is what you're claiming, and that provides the shear, then this is telling us the opposite, that we look at the current usefulness of the object and not its ultimate usefulness. So how do you explain the two Mishnayos over here? Says the Gemara, we know the answer to that. And this is an answer that we already brought up earlier. Because Itmar Allah, Amrav Nachman Amar Rabba Baravu, Alavishain Adam Toreach, Lishrot Samanim Litzboabem, Dugma Leira. The point is that there may be things where the ultimate usability is much less, but because of the fact that no one in his right mind, we had this for it yesterday when we were talking about mixing cement. So even though you could use a tiny bit of cement for a purpose of closing up one, you know, this happens all the time to people, spachtel. Where you used to have to make your own spachtel, nobody would ever fill the holes until they had a bunch of holes. Then they started selling the already mixed spachtel that you could put a piece on, a cover on, and it stays damp to be able to keep using. So you take a little bit on a knife, on a spachtel knife, and you close up the hole. But if you're talking about making, there's a big difference. It's not because it's not choshev. It's because I'm not going to go to the trouble of doing it. That's all. Mashenkin over here, where I will go to the trouble because I want to have the ore of that small size to be able to use for a kamiya. So over there, I'm tining, Reb Nachman. There's a major difference here. You can't compare something that's unusable because of logistics. People don't want to do it. I'm talking about where that's not the problem. So now the problem is in the shear of the chashivas. What's the shear of the chashivas? This is the shear of the chashivas. It's always the same all the way through. So forget it. Okay, says Rava, wait a minute. I got another problem. Okay, what about in the case of garden seeds? Zero negina. Okay, the Mishnah says, what is the number of shear of seeds that you would be taking out, that you would be chayiva? So it says, zero negina, pachot mikigogeret, the amount would be less than the shear of food. So it would be a little bit less than the grogeret, the dried fig shear. Reb Yehuda ben Beseir Omer, five seeds. Take out five seeds, then that's already mechayev of you. But once those seeds have been planted and something grew from them, even just like a tiny stalk. So over there, it says in the Mishnah, a different Mishnah, but it says zevel, v'chol hadak. Let's say you're taking off out some fertilizer or some sand, very fine sand to be putting around the bottom. It would be the shir k'dei l'zabobo kelach shokrov. Even if you brought out enough to fertilize one single stalk of cabbage, says Rabbi Akiva, or the Chachomim say the shir would be, it would be enough for a krisha. A krisha is a leek which is smaller than a cabbage. But anyway, so we see that even though one single stalk of cabbage or of leek is enough to be mechayev of you, it's certainly not enough when it's still a seed. So don't tell me that before something has become what it needs to become, it's going to be the same shear as that which it is when it will become. Says the Gemara, the same issue. Vayitmar Allah. Omer of Papa, there's a big difference. The Mishnah it's talking about, where the stalk is choshev, is because it's already grown. Adazriya. And that first Mishnah is talking about where it was not, it's still in seeds. But the reason is not because it's not choshev, is because nobody's going to take the trouble to plant one seed. That's all. But enochinami, in terms of the actual chashivut of the item, if it wouldn't be for that logistical point that it's not considered to be the shear of matzni and komohu, so then enochinami would be chayev. Oh, darn, says Rav. Okay, I got another thing. How about some clay, okay? You've got this clay, so you have tit. So before you're going to knead it, it says that the shear is, now this is the sugya that we had already yesterday, so we already know, this was actually our prototype for this problem, was the making of the spachtel. So, but he didn't know this yet. So this conversation between Rava and Reb Nachman is going to repeat what we learned last night. Modim chachomim l'rebishim l'motzi shvachim l'rosh v'shut harabim, that the shear is a revius. And remember that here we were talking about really filthy water, as opposed to just sink water that could be used for certain things. Maybe you use it to wash the floor. Mashenkin over here, since it came together with dam, so we were asking them, well, what's it good for? So Shavkal Maichazu, and Rabbi Yirmiya said, you can use it in order to knead some of this clay, right? And yet it says in the Braita that the shear of clay is like this tiny little bit that you're going to use to close up the opening for the mafoach, the fan that forces the, what do you call that? The, I'm telling you, I'm becoming aphasic over
here.
The bellows, thank you. The bellows that it's, the air shouldn't fly out, but it shouldn't lose your air pressure when you're putting bellows into bringing oxygen into your little furnace over there and for firing it up. And that's like a tiny, tiny little bit. It certainly doesn't require a ravias of water to make, which makes it an enormous amount. So how come it says Bosa Delikbele? It says all we need is Ktit Kedei Lasot Ben Pikor. And we know the answer. And this actually was our model for the answer. Hasam Nami Kedam Rinan, Lefi She'en Adam Toreach, Legabela Tatit Lasot Pikor. It's very simple. People don't go to the trouble of making that small amount of tit in the first place, but if they already have it, then they will use it. And that's a completely different issue than the question of the theory of what is considered to be a usable amount. Oh, man, oh, man. I got another rias. That's from a Tashma. Okay. I still insist. There's got to be a difference between the chashivut of a thing that's already been processed, the gabei hotza, to the same item that has not as yet been processed. Take a look at this. In terms of the dinim of what type of things can be used for different shiurim when we're talking about processing skins. Now, there's three different levels of processing. Now, the truth is there's also more, but we're only going to discuss three, and I'll explain in a moment why. So there's three different orot, okay? There's what's called matzah. Everyone's going to explain what we mean. And there's what's called chayfa, and there's what's called diftera, okay? Matzah means the same thing that matzah means when you're making matzah to eat. It means it's not, you don't add anything to it. It just is what it is. So it's the water and the flour. So over here, matzah would mean it's the hide as it is. It has not been treated. So it's delo maliach, delo kamiach, v'delo afitz. There's three stages that we would usually go through. First, truth is more than that, because first we would have to dry it, as we're going to see. But so there's first the drying process, where it's not roy to do anything to. Then when it's dried, the first stage of tanning would be using salt on it. The next would be soaking it in flour with a little bit of water that draws out all of the moisture. And the next stage would be to use chemicals on it. And the chemical that was usually used were gallnuts, which is afitzim. So we would call the chemical process the afitz. And so this matzah hasn't been nothing. No salt, not flour, not the gallnuts, nothing. So what's the shir legabei hotzah? Tani Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yehuda, that is enough to contain a small weight, because remember the weights were made usually out of lead, which very easily gets rubbed out. And if you start using them and you're not careful with them, you're going to have to throw out your weights, because remember it's an issur d'oraisa to keep a standardized weight that is not standard. And because of that, they were very careful with the weights, so they would wrap them in the equivalent of foam. What was the equivalent of foam? Untreated hide, right? So it's very soft, and it will keep the weight in it. So it's a very tiny thing. And whatever the smallest weight, when you say a small weight, how big is a small weight? Amar Abaya, a small weight that we use, the smallest weight that's used commercially in a normal store, we're not talking about gold or things like that, is a 16th of a litra in Pumpadisa. That's the riva de Pumpadita. So that's a tiny shear. Okay, the next stage we said was chifa. And that has been salted, okay? But it still hasn't been floured up, and it hasn't been treated with chemicals. What's the shear for that? Shear for that is, like it says in the Mishnah, it says if you have skin, that's what it's referring to, that it was salted, then the shear would be to make a kamiya. Okay, the next stage of skin is called diftera. Diftera has been treated, it's been maliach, it's been kamiach, but it has not yet been treated with chemicals. There's no afitz, there are no gallnuts used on it. What's the shear for that? That is very small also. Kedei lichtov alav et haget. And that is tiny, because remember that theoretically, a gate only needs to have the names of the man, the names of the woman, the date, the signatures, and the words, Zareat Mutarat L'chol Adam. Anyway, but note, here's my point. But note, it says over here the shear is to wrap the riva de pumpadita. That's what we said, right? Now that is larger than a kamiya. So how do you explain that? Since according to you, the ultimate use is the thing that is going to define all of the shiurim all the way through. Now wait a minute, says the Gemara. Over there, Rabbi Chiya, when he was talking about matzah, he was talking about raw hide, which means that it is still damp. You can't yet do anything to it. I wasn't talking about that, because remember, when I was saying that you're able to be mechayev you because of the ultimate purpose, it means that this thing is the raw material of that purpose, and you can now go about doing the next stage. Over here, you can't do anything. You can't be moleach this. You're going to have to sit around and wait until it's dry. So until that point arrives, the process doesn't begin. And when the process doesn't begin, I have to ask you, what use is this as it currently is? Because you have nothing else to do with it. There I agree 100% to Reb Nachman. If as it currently is, it doesn't allow you to process it, so then, okay, tell me what I'm going to be able to do with it. Don't tell me I'm going to be able to ultimately process it. That doesn't give it chashivas now. And because of that, I have to tell you, the only thing I can think of to do with this is to use it as foam to protect my weights. That's a different thing. All right, now I'm going to bring out the big artillery, the Mishnah and Kalim. You're not going to be able to argue with that now, are you? But it's not. What about our Mishnah and Kalim? Habeged shlosha al shlosha. If you're talking about Midras, before we had the din, according to Tosfos, that all shiurim from Moshav are the tefach al tefach, that he argued with Rashi. But over here we're talking about Midras. So that would be, if you're talking about begodim, then it would be a shear of 3x3 tefachim here. If it was sak, you need 4x4 tefachim. If it's or, if it's or, it needs to be 5x5 tefachim. If it's a mapatz that's made out of a mat, that's made out of reeds and so on, then it's shisha al shisha. In these shiurim are true legabe tumas meis or legabe tumas midras. And the Braita says that habeged v'hasak v'haor, the halacha is that whatever their shiur is for tuma, it would be the same as that shiur would be the same for the chashivas of carrying it out on Shabbos, because after all, that's the basis of the tumah. Now, how do you explain the fact that over here it says that the shear of R is 5x5 tefachim, much larger than the shear that you're talking about, which is to be able to make the kamiya? So it's obvious that there's a big difference between untanned and processed, right? And they're not the same. Says Reb Nachman, very good point. However, we are talking about a different case over there. The Mishnah in Kalim is talking about leather that's not meant to be processed. It's talking about the leather that's been boiled up for kartubla. That kartubla is hardened leather that you use as a covering over a table, or you could put down on the ground to be able to eat off of it, and it is not ever going to be treated. That's a different thing. That's basically furniture leather. And furniture leather indeed is 5x5, but that Mishnah and Kalim therefore is not Nogea, our shear over here. Now let's take the next piece in the Mishnah. The shear of cloth is kedei lechtov alav parsha ketana shebetfilin, which we said is Shema Yisrael. Now note that we didn't talk about cloth, right? We got only up to the stage of where you process the leather to the point where it was already dried, and it was salted, and it was kamiach with flour, but it was still not ufitz. If it's also ufitz, then it would turn into parchment. And why didn't we measure that and talk about the shear for that? That's because kalaf is considered to be a different level of, we don't refer to it as or anymore. We don't call kalaf hides. You call kalaf is a different object. So that's a writing material. And because of that, it's not considered to be part of this entire gradated chashivas for the leather. So now, what is the shear of cloth? That would be to be able to write Shema Yisrael for your tefillin. Problem is that a braita says, whether you're dealing with cloth or duchsustus, the shear is to write a mezuzah. Now, let's just get our terminology right. There are three different things that we need to talk about in terms of the kashrus for safras. And there's three things that we use for safras. We have to write tefillin, mezuzah, v'sefer Torah. That's the name of the safra section of the Rambam, right? Hilchot, tefillin, mezuzah, v'sefer Torah. Okay, so now we also have three different types of pieces of hide. Let's just take the hide and note that we have the skin itself is very, very prominently divided into an epidermis and dermis. So you've got the part of the skin that can actually be pulled off from the part that is closer to the inside. And that is the difference between the gvil, which is the entire thing, a rawhide that you have both pieces that were left together and tanned together. It's rare for you to see that because it's not often used. And it's a big problem today. We don't use gvil to write a sefer Torah. Sometimes Barney, I'm sure, could tell us about the sefer Torah that he found written on gvil, I'm sure. But in any event, the ikar halakha l'meshem Sinai is like this, that the sefer Torah is written on gvil. Now, it doesn't mean that it's mu'ukav, it has to be written on gvil. That the mezuzah is written on the duchsustus. The word duchsustus is really built of the Greek for duch sus, the place of the meat, the place of the flesh, which means that it's the part that is lower down and closer to the actual meat of the animal. So that, when it's been stripped of the upper layer, which is the cloth, is usable to write on, but you write on the side that was facing upwards outside of the animal, which is called the side of the hair. Even though you may already have pulled off the area, actually has hair on it. There it's written on the side of the hair. The cloth is the side that actually contains the hair, but it's the part underneath. And you don't write after processing. You don't write on the cloth on the side where the hair was. You write on the side that was facing the duchsustus. So it was facing downwards. Okay. So now, what would be the shear? What seems to be saying that either klaf or duchsustus, the shear would be enough to write a mezuzah. But a mezuzah, of course, is not kosher if you just wrote the parsha ketanah shebetfilin of Shema Yisrael. So therefore, it seems to contradict the Mishnah. The Mishnah said Shema Yisrael, and over here it says both parshas because it has to be a mezuzah. Nah, when it says a mezuzah, you know, it means, you know, the klaf in the tefillin. So we call the tefillin a mezuzah, meaning, what? You call the tefillin a mezuzah? Come on, that's weird. Oh, no, it's not weird at all. I'll show you that we definitely do that. Look at this braita. So remember that we had the gezeirah of the Yud Ches Damar. That if your hands will touch Kitvei HaKodesh, then they became tamei, and you're going to pasul truma if you touch. Remember, that was a gezerah because of mice, and we wanted to keep mice away from Kitvei HaKodesh. So they would usually put truma together with it, so we made a gezerah, since that attracts mice, not to have it. Fine. Now the question is, what part of your tefillin will make your hands tamei for touching truma? So it says over here, even the ritzuot, if they're attached to the tefillin, they will already make your hands tameh. When they're not attached to the tefillin, bifnei atzman, then they will not make your hands tameh. Reb Shimon ben Yudah, Reb Mishum, Reb Shimon, if you touch the ritzuos, I don't care if they're attached to the tefillin or not, the ritzuos are not kisvei HaKodesh. You would have to touch the actual kitzitza, which is the box of the tefillin, because the box of the tefillin is considered to be kisvei HaKodesh, because it has ksav on it. Rabbi Zakkai quotes the same sheet of Rabbi Shimon, and he says, no, that's not what Rabbi Shimon said. What he said was, you're tohar until you touch the mezuzah. Well, you tell me what it means. Obviously, the context is we're going from the Ritzuas to the Ketzitza to the Parsha. And he's calling the Parsha the Tefillin a Mezuzah, okay? So don't look at me like I'm crazy. It's clear that we do use that word. Yeah, okay, fine. So let me see whether over here contextually that fits, okay? You're telling me there was no stirah when it said the Klaf for Duchsustus is the shear of a Mezuzah, and it's referring to Tefillin. Okay, so now can you continue reading, please? Minikatani Seifa. Klav kidei lichtov alav parsha katana shebetfilin. Okay, so come on. So obviously, Shishma Yisrael. So obviously, the ratio was not talking about tefillin. It was talking about a mezuzah, because if you're going to identify the last part of the brisa, you're going to identify tefillin as tefillin. So then when you say the mezuzah, you can't tell me in the context of that brisa that the mezuzah is another way of referring to the tefillin. That's ridiculous. So therefore, you've got a contradiction here. So obviously, what we need to do is to understand that the Braita was separately addressing the Duchsustus and the Klav, which is its own answer. The answer suggests itself, indeed demands itself. Okay, Katani. Klav the Duchsustus. Okay, we got two questions. What's the shear of those two things? Let me answer the Duchsustus first. Duchsustus is used for mezuzahs, because that's what you're supposed to write a mezuzah on. Sefer Torah is agvil. Halakha l'bash misinai. Mezuzah is on Duchsustus. Halakha l'bash misinai. Tefillin are on Klav. Halakha l'bash misinai. Now, therefore, the Duchsustus would be the shear of writing a mezuzah. The Klav, which is roy for writing the tefillin, the shear would be Parsha Ketana Shebetulin, Shema Yisrael Sinai. Everything is clear. So what's your problem? Omar Rav, I got a chiddush for you. Actually, Duchsustus is the same as Klav. Now, it's a very strange statement. I mean, would it mean like this? This is not for Rav is saying. This is what the Gemara is pointing out. In other words, you're saying that in the same way you can write tefillin on klaf, you can write tefillin on duchsustus? Is that true? It's not. How about the Mishnah that says klaf kidei lichtov pashak tana shebetfilin shishma Yisrael, which is mash medavka klaf, and not duchsustus? And duchsustus is not used for tefillin. Because we're making two separate shiurim, for Duchsustus and for Klav. Well, that means that lichatchila, la mitzvah, that you're supposed to write Klav, tefillin on Klav. But if you went ahead and you used Duchsustus, it would still be kosher. That would be what we'd have to say, and that's what Rav means. That b'diavad, they would both be all right. Really? Look at this braita, where I'll show you that you cannot write tefillin on Duchsustus. Halacha l'Moshe Misinai. Tefillin is a la klaf. Mezuzah is a la duchsustus. The place where you write on the klaf is on the side that's facing downwards towards the animal, away from the hair. And duchsustus, the place where you would write on duchsustus, is the place that was facing outwards towards the hair of the animals. Duchsustus b'makom se'ar. Okay, now go tell me, halakha l'moshe misinai is what, fun and games? No. It's halakha l'moshe misinai lechatchila. It's la mitzvah. It's telling you the right way to do it. But l'maisa, I could still maintain that if I wrote the tefillin on duchsustus, it would still be kosher. Really? Tanya shina pasul. If you did it the other way around, it would be pasul. That means the mezuzah would be pasul. If you wrote the mezuzah on the klaf, it would be pasul. But if you wrote tefillin on duchsustus, it would be kosher. Really? How about the fact that there's another braisa that says if you'd made any change in either one? No, either one, you don't understand. Either one doesn't mean either the mezuzah or the tefillin. Either one refers to the mezuzah. And it means if you made either change, that is to say, you wrote the mezuzah on klaf, but you wrote it on the part of the klaf that was facing outwards, which was the area of the hair. Or you wrote it on duchsustus, but you wrote it on the duchsustus on the part that was facing downwards towards the body. Either way, it would be possible, because that is neither klaf nor duchsustus. It has nothing to do with the question of the mezuzah being possible on klaf. Or, you know what? It could be. I mean, I know I'm pushing it. You know? Okay, so maybe the idea over here is that if you wrote tefillin on duchsustus, they're possible. But it would be a machlokas tanoim that still Raf could hold up. And Shina Bezeu Bezeu is a machlokas tanoim, whether a Shinui would also pasul tefillin. How do I know that? The Tanya. Shina Bezeu Bezeu pasul. So either case, meaning either tefillin or mezuzah, the way we understood lechatchila, is actually pasul. But Reb Acha said it was kosher. And then in order to say that, he was quoting Mishum Reb Acha Bar Chanina, and some say Mishum Reb Yaakov Reb Chanina. And so Rav could be going, basically, like Reb Acha. So he's the one that says that it, since Reb Acha Bar Chanina was matir, so Reb Acha was matir. B'diavad. Maybe that's what Rav was saying. Rav Papa Amar, it's very simple. Rav was saying his halacha like the Tana Devei Menashe. The Tana Devei Menashe, Kitava al haniyar v'ala matli psula. If you wrote it, now what is the big it? We don't know what the it is yet, okay? But if he wrote it on paper, or he wrote it on a piece of cloth, it's possible. But if he wrote it on cloth, on gevil, or on duchsustus, kshera. Now what is it with the capital I? So kitava mai. You think we're talking about a mezuzah? Couldn't be talking about a mezuzah, because you certainly would not write a mezuzah on cloth, right? Because we said before the mezuzah on cloth is possible. And you can only write the mezuzah on duchsustus. So we can't be referring to the mezuzah, must be referring to tefillin. And therefore the Brice is saying that tefillin is kosher if it's written on duchsustus. Excuse me, v'latimech. A gvil? There's somebody else you could write tefillin on gvil? Nobody holds that. Tefillin agvil mikatvino. We haven't brought one single marker for being able to write tefillin on gvil. So it can't be talking about tefillin. So then maybe what it's referring to is a sefer Torah. So kitanim is sefer Torah, and therefore you can't bring any raya bichlal for Rav's heter of saying that you could write a mezuzah, a tefillin on duchsustus. Okay, so we haven't been able to show that Rav is wrong. Maybe we can show that Rav is right. Lema misayale. The Braisa says, Kayotsebo, we were talking about before, the question of being Mishana Mikedusha Chamura Lekedusha Kala. So the question is, can you turn your tefillin of your tefillin shel yad to use them for tefillin shel rosh? So if you want to take out the parshas and so on, cut them apart, whatever, can you turn them into tefillin shel rosh? Yes, you can. But can you use tefillin shel rosh for tefillin shel yad? No, you can't. Why? Because the tefillin shel rosh are considered to be a kedusha chamura. And ein moridei mikedusha chamura, the kedusha kala. That was the beginning. Now, kayotzibo, there's another such thing, namely, that if your tefillin wore out, or your sefer Torah wore out, you can't use the pieces for a mezuzah. So let's say you have the first parsha of the mezuzah is on the bottom of the daf of the Sefer Torah. So what you want to do is you want to cut out that piece. This is how Tosfos understands it. You want to cut out that piece, and then you'll continue writing the rest of the mezuzah underneath. No, you can't use a Sefer Torah or a tefillin in the same way and turn it into a mezuzah. Why? Because a mezuzah is considered to be kedusha kala. And ein moridin mikedusha chamura l'kedusha kala. You don't take a Torah or a tefillin and turn it into a mezuzah. But what's the problem here? The problem is that you're not supposed to turn something from Kedusha Chamura into Kedusha Kala, okay? But other than that, we wouldn't have a problem. What do you mean we wouldn't have a problem? I mean, how could we do it? Isn't it different materials? So there's got to be something that you could write both tefillin and mezuzah on. So what did you write it on? Tell me. Must be like Rav said. You wrote it on duchsustus. So you see from here that indeed, if you had tefillin written on duchsustus, the only problem of adding to them and turning the tefillin into a mezuzah is not the problem that it would be the tefillin were a different material. It's the same material as duchsustus. The only problem is you can't write a kedusha kala. I don't know. Maybe it's talking about over a year where it was written on cloth and you can't turn the cloth into a mezuzah. Cloth? How can you write a mezuzah on cloth? Whoever heard of such a thing? Boy, the times change, huh? So, mezuzah aklaf mikatvinan? What do you mean? We're allowed to write a mezuzah on klaf? Yes, there is such a shita. And we can learn that that's what it's referring to, because there's a brayta that says like this. Kitava ala klaf ala niyar v'ala matlit. If you write, here it's talking about a mezuzah. You write it on klaf, you write it on paper, you write it on a piece of material, it's possible. Whereas Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, well, I could tell you that Rabbi Meir, who was one of the greatest sofrim in all of history, he used to write mezuzah on a klaf. And he said it's better to write it on a klaf because klaf is more long-lasting and it's mishtameret and there's less of a chance that it's going to become pasul. And the halacha l'meshim Sinai was only allowing you to write it on tuchsustas, but it wasn't insisting that you write it on tuchsustas. So of course you can write it on a klaf. So and indeed the Ramah paskins for us, klaf is better than all of the others because of the way in which we process klaf. So then if it's going aliba, Rebbe Meir, so then the idea of your mezuzah that would be written on klaf is kosher. And if that's the case, then how can you use it to prove that tefillin can be written on tuchsustas? It's the opposite direction. As a matter of fact, whoa, of course, it now hit me. If that's true, then maybe that's all that Rav meant in the first place. Now that you figured this out, so then don't understand Rav as saying duchsustas is as good as klaf, meaning that you'd be allowed to write tefillin on duchsustas. Enochinami, maybe you can't write tefillin on duchsustas, which is exactly what we've been saying all along. And what Rav actually said was klaf is just as good as duchsustas, meaning that just like duchsustas, you could write a mezuzah, av klaf kotvim alav mezuzahs. It's coming to say that klaf is also kosher le mezuzah.